Well, let's continue our look at the spiritual lives of the presidents as we've been doing this for this election year. And we come to the 38th president, President Gerald R. Ford. R stands for Rudolph. And we look at these basic facts as we're starting out, and then we'll get a little more specific as we go. But what's he most known for? Well, Gerald Ford became president amidst the scandals of his predecessor, Richard Nixon. And he's the only man to become president without having been elected to the office of president or vice president. He was born in Nebraska, but while he was still a baby, his parents were divorced. He and his mother moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where Gerald would grow up. His mother remarried to Gerald Ford Sr., who adopted Gerald and gave him his name. Gerald's birth name was Leslie Lynch King. Growing up, he was an excellent athlete. His best sport was football, where he played center and linebacker. He went on to play for the University of Michigan, where they won 2 national championships. He was also in the Boy Scouts. He earned the Eagle Scout badge and was the only president to achieve Eagle Scout. After graduating from the University of Michigan, he turned down offers to play professional football with the NFL to go to Yale Law University. And while at Yale, he studied law and coached the boxing team. After graduating from Yale, he passed the bar exam and opened his own law firm. However, soon World War II broke out and he enlisted in the Navy. He rose to the rank of lieutenant commander while serving on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. In 1948, he was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He served as a congressman for the next 25 years, and for the last 8 years of his service, he was the minority leader of the House. He earned the respect of many of his peers through this time as being a fair and honest politician. As scandals rocked President Richard Nixon's White House, the current Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned from that office. The president needed someone the people and his fellow leaders could trust, so he chose Gerald Ford, and Ford took over as vice president. Soon, more information broke on the Watergate scandal, and it became clear that President Nixon would be impeached. And instead of putting himself and the country through this bitter trial, Nixon resigned from office. And because of the 25th Amendment, Gerald Ford was now president, despite having not been elected to the office of either vice president or president. He considered it his job to restore the country's faith in their leaders and the office of president. In this effort, he largely succeeded, and when President Jimmy Carter took his oath of office, he began his speech with, "For myself and for our nation, I want to thank my predecessor for all he has done to heal our land." Ford continued with Nixon's effort on foreign relations. He brokered a temporary truce in the Middle East. He also established new treaties with the Soviet Union, further reducing nuclear arms. The economy struggled, however, during Ford's time as president, and the country entered a recession with high inflation and many people losing their jobs. Now, shortly after becoming president, Ford pardoned Nixon for any crimes he may have committed. Although this was expected, many people were upset with Ford for doing this, and it's probably the main reason why he wasn't elected to a second term. He retired to California after leaving office. He refused to get involved in politics and led a quiet life. He lived to the age of 93 before dying in 2006. Some fun facts about him. His middle name is Rudolph. He nearly died in World War II when a typhoon hit his aircraft carrier and it caught fire. Around 400 Eagle Scouts attended Ford's funeral and took part in the procession. His number 48 football jersey was retired at the University of Michigan. And while a congressman, Gerald was a member of the Warren Commission, which investigated the assassination of John F. Kennedy. He was awarded the Profile in Courage Award from the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation in 2003 for his pardon of Nixon. Many people hated him for it, but he knew it was the right thing to do. And even Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy, who was strongly against the pardon at the time, said he later realized that Ford had made the right decision. Well, let's delve a little bit more into this man's life. The folksy charm we're reading from the book by Ian Dale entitled The President's 250 Years of American Political Leadership says the folksy charm that would later soothe a wounded nation was formed in the American interior. Born to a middle-class mother and an abusive father, he was born Leslie L. King Jr. in Omaha, Nebraska. At the age of two, his parents divorced, and mother Dorothy and Leslie moved to her parents' house in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There she fell in love with Gerald Rudolph Ford, the two living together in a rented two-bed apartment. Years later, the future president would be formally named after his stepfather. Ford's adolescence was an all-American affair, an athletic star. He played football in front of 100,000 fans at the University of Michigan, and was even offered $2,800 to play for the Green Bay Packers. And in his autobiography, Ford credited his sporting youth for giving him a thick hide to face down critics. But law, rather than the gridiron, seemed his future. Yale beckoned, but after his return to Michigan to start a small practice, the Second World War intervened. Ford signed up to the Navy almost as soon as America declared war. His time at sea was not without incident. Specifically, he had at least one near-death experience after slipping on the deck of the USS Monterey in a Filipino typhoon and hanging on for dear life as the ship came close to capsizing. He dodged death again on the rest and recuperation back home in the States, narrowly escaping a crashed plane seconds before it burst into flames. It wouldn't be the last time Ford nearly came to a premature end. Later, he was the subject of two close but no cigar assassination attempts, both in California. Returning from the war, determined to do more in public life, his political career began in earnest. An internationalist conservative at heart, he was encouraged by friends in 1948 to take on the isolationist machine politician, Republican incumbent Barney Jonkman, for the GOP nomination in Michigan's 5th District. To Jonkman's dismay, the 34-year-old Ford's energetic campaigning saw him win the primary by a vote of nearly 2-1. The next morning, Ford traveled to a farm in the district and started work at 4:30 a.m. So desperate was he for votes, he'd promised the farm's owners he'd help milk cows for 2 weeks if he won. It was the toughest electoral fight of his entire political career until the last year of it. In a solid, safe seat, he won his House of Representatives seat with 60% of the vote, and he never looked back. Around the same time, he met and then swiftly married a divorcee by the name of Betty Bloomer. Now Betty Ford, she would be by the president's side and become an American icon in her own way for her candor and the attention she drew to breast cancer and later substance addiction for the rest of his life. So began a congressional career of quiet ascent with friends on all sides. By the early 1960s, he was a respected senior figure within Republican ranks and maneuvered to become minority leader, and he served as part of that Warren Commission to investigating the assassination of JFK. All of his efforts were a step closer to the only job he really wanted, which was Speaker of the House. Well, Robert Whitney, in the book The American President's Biographies of Our Chief Executives, talks a little bit more specifically about some of the things that Gerald Ford was dealing with. The first chief executive to reach the office by the route of presidential appointment rather than election. 61-year-old Gerald R. Ford became president at the climax of a constitutional crisis in 1974 over the Watergate scandals that had caused his predecessor, Richard Nixon, to resign in disgrace. A determinedly honest and deeply religious Episcopalian, Ford promised upon being sworn in that our long national nightmare is over. The people of the United States, weary and disillusioned by almost daily revelations of misdeeds by government officials, welcomed Ford's accession. As the first Eagle Scout to become president, he seems sure to restore honesty and integrity to the nation's highest office. For the first time since FDR had moved into the White House in 1933 during the Great Depression, Americans were almost unanimous in their support of a chief executive. But the honeymoon was short-lived. Without prior consultation with congressional leaders or with the special Watergate prosecutor, and without giving any previous hint of his intentions, Ford made a surprise announcement only a month after taking office that he granted Nixon a full, free, and absolute pardon for all offenses committed during his administration. At the same time, he revealed that Nixon eventually would be allowed to destroy the tapes of conversations that played an important part in his downfall, but this agreement was later nullified by Congress. Outraged that Nixon would be allowed to escape indictment and trial while his associates went to prison, the news media recalled a sarcastic comment attributed to President Lyndon Johnson. Quote, Jerry Ford is a nice guy, but he played too much football with his helmet off. End of quote. More seriously, congressional leaders called the pardon a misuse of power and an impeachable offense. Questions were raised as to the constitutionality of granting a pardon prior to conviction in a court of law, and speculation was widely voiced that the pardon was part of a political deal by which Ford had attained the presidency. Well, one of my memories as I was a young man at this time, in seventh, eighth grade, going into high school, is how he was pictured, talking about Ford, how he was pictured by the media. And in his biography entitled Gerald R. Ford by Douglas Brinkley, it talks a little bit about how they made fun of him. And it says this, at least as hard to take as the charge of dumbness was the media's depiction of Ford as a clumsy oaf. For some reason, the sort of embarrassing everyday missteps the press had ignored in covering previous presidents became news when committed by Gerald Ford, be it stumbling on a Colorado ski slope, tripping on a church stairway, or bumping his head on the door to Air Force One. The media characterized him as a klutz. The comedian Chevy Chase running slapstick routine as a bumbling Ford on Saturday Night Live became so well known that the president tried to diffuse its impact by taping self-deprecating bits for an episode of the popular NBC comedy series. That particular 90 Minutes was guest hosted by his good-humored press secretary, Ron Nesson, in April of 1976. Chevy definitely cost some votes, Ford later joked, but I had to admit he was darn funny. James Baker observed, no one knew the president ever quite understood Chevy Chase's Saturday Night Live impersonation of him as a genial dolt who stumbled over doorsteps and big words. Unfortunately, the caricature, particularly the physical humor, took on a life of its own. And so you see the power of the media is continuing on with Nixon. It was those attacks, and then he went beyond that. They went beyond that with Ford, with personal items. Well, John Wiley, in his book, The Faith of the Presidents, talks about specifically what happened when it came to Gerald Ford and his spiritual life. Well, it says this, Ford grew up in an Episcopalian household, though it wasn't the strictest of families. in terms of religious prioritization. When many of his Dutch Calvinist friends were required by their parents to attend all regular church meetings, Ford recalled how he would sometimes just go out and play baseball on Sundays instead. After serving in World War II, Ford was elected to the U.S. Congress, and this seems to be when his faith became more pronounced. As a congressman, he attended weekly Bible studies, and while doing so, he met an evangelical leader named Billy Zioli, the head of Gospel Films. Ford and Zioli continued their friendship into Ford's presidency, during which time Zioli would send a typed-out note to be delivered to Ford's desk, which said, "God's got a better idea." This was an intentional contrast to the Ford Motor Company's advertising headline back then of "Ford's got a better idea." These notes included a Bible verse and prayer. Ford received 146 devotional memos as president from Zioli, which had an enormous effect on Ford's life and presidency. And no doubt, the Ford presidency, coming in the aftermath of the Watergate scandal, would attempt to weather many political storms. He prayerfully attempted to restore honor to the presidency, but it was no small task. Controversially, he pardoned Richard Nixon, explaining his decision in a Christian context. Says this: "The Constitution is the supreme law of our land, and it governs our actions as citizens. Only the laws of God, who governs our consciences, are superior to it. I do believe with all my heart and mind and spirit that I, not as president, but as a humble servant of God, will receive justice without mercy if I fail to show mercy." Speaking at the Southern Baptist Convention in 1976, the year of his close but failed re-election attempt, Ford said, "In my own life and throughout my career in public service, I have found in the pages of the Bible a steady compass and a source of great strength and peace, as each of my predecessors in the presidency has done. I asked for God's guidance as I undertook the duties of this office, and I have asked for that guidance many times since." And so we see his explanation of why he felt strongly about giving Nixon that pardon. And we lastly look at the book, The Presidents and Their Faith, by Grinder and Shaw. And we see this. It says, "Perhaps we rarely think about Ford and religion because of the two men who succeeded him who seemed to be so overtly religious, Carter and Reagan. In contrast to those two politicians and presidents, Ford was indeed quiet about his faith. During the 1976 election season, Ford seemed a little stunned by the religious rhetoric during his primary battle with Reagan, which Ford saw as a partial lack of integrity on Reagan's part, especially when Betty's comparative progressive views on abortion rights and women's rights became an issue of derision for the Reagan campaign. And in the general election, Ford was particularly shocked by Jimmy Carter's opening discussion, his being born again and his sinning to Playboy of all places. Ford recalls in his autobiography, quote, "Throughout the campaign, Carter had talked about his religious convictions in a way that I found discomforting. I have always felt a closeness to God and looked to a higher being for guidance and support, but I didn't think that it was appropriate to advertise my religious beliefs. Carter, I was sure, had made a serious mistake. Well, one thing is clear regarding Ford's view on religion in the American presidency. He was out of touch with what America seemed to want in a president, a man who was overtly Christian." Indeed, Ford was shocked in the next election cycle Reagan won the presidency, since he never regarded Reagan as a serious challenger. A Time to Heal, the autobiography of Gerald R. Ford, begins with an epitaph from Abraham Lincoln that Ford uses to connect his transitional presidency with the presidency during another time of national crisis. "I know there is a God. I see the storm coming, and I know that his hand is in it. If he has a place for me, and I think he has, I believe I am ready. With God's help, I shall not fail." Ford chooses to begin his religiously titled autobiography with scripture and a reference to another president's hope in an act of providence. The end of Ford's life in 2006 is marked by this statement from the Episcopal News Service. quote, "The former president, a faithful Episcopalian, was a man known for his great integrity and his firm belief in God. He never sought the presidency, yet when it was thrust upon him, he led wisely, guiding our nation well during a time of high inflation, fuel shortages, and the complex foreign policy challenges presented by the Cold War. A kind man who worked hard at building bridges and shaping consensus. He will be remembered for his dignity, his humility, and his devotion to healing a divided nation."